Thankful to be able to talk to you guys this morning. I have a particular affinity for college ministry. I served for a while, about a year or so, as a director of college ministry, one of the college ministries on campus several years ago. I'm not even sure Trey knows that. So I have this deep abiding affection for college ministry. It feels like as though, since I'm the oldest dude in the room by far, it feels though, however, it's not been that long since I've been in your shoes. And I know the struggles that come with that, and I've seen that both personally and experientially with other students as well. So I'm very grateful to be able to talk to you guys this morning. This is a tough topic. So Trey assigned me with depression, and I was a bit skeptical at first when I received this phone call why he would select me to talk about depression, if that be my personality or something else. But it's a tough topic, right? If you watched the game yesterday, you may be in the throes of either discouragement or depression, so I'll leave that with you. You know, it would be beneficial, I think, in some ways, if you had a speaker stand up here to tell you that he suffered through several years of depression, bouts with it. There's something about the experience of going through something that kind of lends credibility to it, especially if you're speaking on it. And yet, I got to tell you, I stand up here, I've never suffered personally from depression. I have with discouragement. So one of the things I want to do today is maybe make a distinction between those two things. All depressed people are discouraged, but not all discouraged people are depressed. So I stand up here to tell you, yeah, I've dealt with discouragement. I've not dealt with the means of depression that comes with that. But I will tell you this, that I'm not altogether immune to depression either. And so really brief, before I get into defining all these things, I thought it'd be good if I told you something just about myself, really briefly. I was introduced to depression when I was 8. And it happened about 3 o'clock in the morning. So I was 8 years old, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up, which is not an uncommon thing for an 8-year-old to do. But the reason I woke up was because I heard someone yelling. And the person I heard yelling was my dad. And he was having a nightmare. Also not an uncommon thing to happen. Perhaps that's happened to you. But what was uncommon about this nightmare, which, by the way, kept going on and on, was the fact that my dad had suffered through a really traumatic experience in his life. He did one tour in Vietnam. As a matter of fact, Ken Burns, the documentary maker, this past week, released a great documentary. I just started watching it, called Vietnam. And what I found out later, I didn't know this as an 8-year-old boy, what I found out later is my dad was suffering from what's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. But he was also in the throes of depression, deep-seated depression. And so what began to happen over the next few years is my dad began to medicate himself with this. And so, friends, I stand up here today as a 48-year-old man who is still deeply affected as being an 8-year-old boy, seeing a father who self-medicated himself with alcohol and with medication. So I'm not immune to this topic. It's actually sculpted most of my life. My personality, if I really thought about it much, has been defined by this topic in some ways. So I stand up here not with the experience of personally going through this as one who is depressed. But brothers and sisters, I know what it feels like. I know the texture of it very well. And so I kind of stand up here with that in mind. So if you see your handout, if you have a handout in your lap today, some things. I've made a drawing up here as well. This is a very difficult topic to not just to talk about, but to define as well. We know statistically that one in 4 people will suffer from depression. That's 25%. However, we also know that 100% of you in this room will suffer from discouragement. So none of us are immune to this as well. So it's good, I think, to define our terms when we talk about these things. So I drew this box up here. I'm going to refer to this box in a few minutes. I'm a visual learner. So I see things and kind of drawing them out. So bear with me as we go through this. I'll let you, somewhere on your notes, draw that out as well. So what do we talk about when we mean that someone's discouraged or that someone's depressed? So a couple of definitions. So the issue of discouragement, which I've mentioned, we've all gone through this at some point in our lives. So discouragement could be something like this. Let you jot this down. It's limited periods of time where we have disappointment, we have sadness, we have shame, we have worry. I'm worried about things right now that's going on that's going to happen Monday with my job. I'm concerned about it. And I suspect you are too, maybe with your classes. Right? You've got a grade already that you're not that happy with. I've been there. You've got a teacher that you maybe have some conflict with. You've got a parent. You've got friends that you perhaps have drawn discouragement from. It's emotional sadness as well. This affects our emotions. We are a emotive people, right? We are deep with thought and both emotion, feelings, and those two things are tied together. Oftentimes, it's hard to separate them out as well. So discouragement has a limited time to it. We may be discouraged at some points, and then that discouragement goes away. It has emotional sadness to it. When it's not dealt with, it can lead to depression. We know this. And maybe you're right now, you're on that kind of path to that, or maybe you've been there as well. It's also this, and if nothing else, maybe you can write this down to get a good idea of it, I think, is discouragement is a sense of hopelessness. It's a sense of hopelessness. And I know that we've all been there at some point, not seeing, being able to see out of a situation, and then become really discouraged in that as well. And this is where we have this kind of back and forth between our thoughts and our feelings. The other part of it is the actual topic itself. And once again, these two things are connected together. It's hard to pull them apart, and I'm not necessarily sure we need to always do that as well. But depression can run something like this. And I know Dr. Welch, whom Trey gave the handouts to, so he may define this a little bit differently than I do. So from all my reading, and people actually talk with about this, people who have suffered with depression, hey, how would you define this? And generally, this is kind of the consensus they came to this past couple of weeks I've talked with. That it is this change that happens, and perhaps sometimes it's chemical change, it happens in our body. And it can change us. And it can change us in really profound ways, physically, emotionally, and obviously mentally as well. One person that I talked to this week, whom I care about deeply, who suffered from depression, not just discouragement. And she told me that one of the things is, it's not just the fact of having a sense of hopelessness, it's the fact of just feeling numb. You don't have any feelings. So you may have been there, you may have never kind of reached that spot. And if you haven't reached that spot of just being numb, then maybe you're more in the category of discouragement in that sense. It's also this, it's not just a sense of being hopeless, it's actually being hopeless. And there's a huge difference between those two things. You may have a sense of it, or you may actually be fully engulfed in this idea of hopelessness. Trey mentioned that I'm a teacher, so one of the things I teach at school is I teach all of our college English classes. I teach freshman comp, which some of you have probably taken, most of you. And then the other thing I teach is college world lit. So I do this through Northwest Arkansas Community College. And one of the pieces I teach in World Lit 1 is from a 12th century Italian poet, which you probably heard of. His name is Dante. And Dante, in his famous epic, is driven to the very pits of despair. As a matter of fact, he calls it the infinitus, the inferno. Right? He goes to hell. Before he goes into hell, there is a sign that's posted over the gateway of hell. And if one of the passages that's taken from it, it's a huge passage that Dante has. And Dante has this one particular, though, thing that he says before he enters. He has the Roman poet Virgil be a guide for him through this hell. But one of the things it says in it, it says, you probably have heard this, right? Abandon all hope, all ye who enter here. So even Dante has this kind of idea. Some people argue that even Dante himself was depressed. Who knows? But it's interesting nonetheless to see that even Dante, before he enters hell, equates that with a sense, not just a sense of being hopeless, but being hopeless. Friends, those are hard topics. These are difficult things to talk about. Dr. Welch, in his book, describes what he calls the causes of depression. So this is point number two. I renamed it And all due respect to Dr. Welch, not because I think I know more than he does, because I don't, but because I want to change the wording just a little bit. And what he calls is what he calls the causes of depression, I'd like to call the pathways to depression. And here's why. I'm a person that likes words, and so here's why. Because these four things I'm going to give you don't automatically lead to depression. It's not always the end product. But friends, it can be the cause. It can be the pathway to that. It can be the pathway both to discouragement and to depression as well. So let me give you these pretty quick, and then because I want to get to the passage today to kind of help deal with this as well. So I'm going to draw this up on the board, and maybe we can see how this kind of works as well. By the way, before I do that, I mentioned to you a few minutes ago that we are deeply emotive people, that we are deeply embodied people. Okay. So what in the world does that mean? So I have a little game. It'll take 20 seconds to play. I'd like for you to play along with me on this, okay? And I have to be a little careful here how you answer this, okay? But I have a question for you, and I'd like for you to turn to the person next to you, hopefully a familiar person, and give the answer to the person next to you. Ready? I'd like for you to tell the person next to you where you live. I'll give you 20 seconds to do that. Now, depending on your trust or distrust of the person next to you, you may want to, that may flavor your answer. What's the answer? There are many, right? Can you give me one? Can you give me, where do you live? Woodway Apartments. You don't have to give me the apartment number. Where do you live? We see a theme. Where do you live? Maple West. And where do you live? Paso. Well, friends, all of you, I suspect, gave similar answers to that question. And it's a trick question. Because it's actually not where you live. That's where you reside. Where you live is actually in your mind. You live wherever you're at. And this is the problem that we face, right? That we are in deeply embodied people. We live in our thoughts. And it's hard times sometimes to get those thoughts out to other people. And it's sometimes very difficult for those thoughts to come in and for us to hear what other people are saying as well. So what are these pathways? Really quick. Number one. So these are general, yes. But these pathways, I think, speak to all of our lives in some way. Number one is our hearts. That one of the pathways that we see that come in is actually from ourselves. So we can be our own sense of discouragement. We can be our own sense of depression. How does that so? Well, because of our own sin at times and our own unbelief. We can have unforgiveness. So it's one of the topics that we talked about last week, if you were here, that Mario did, that even our own sense of unforgiveness can fester in our lives. And eventually that can lead to discouragement and eventually that to a pathway of being depressed as well. I do want to put a warning in here, and I started that in the handout too, because please hear me when I say this. Just on this first point, one of the great myths, I think, of depression, and maybe even discouragement too, is that it's always the cause of some kind of unrepentant sin. It could be. It could very well be the cause of some unrepentant sin, but that doesn't mean that it's always that as well. So I told you about my dad really quick. Well, there were a lot of people in our lives, particularly people sometimes in the church, that blamed my dad and said, you've got some kind of deep abiding sin in your life. It's your fault. Friends, that just adds to it, right? If you tell somebody that, you know that, right? It just adds to the discouragement and it just fuels the depression. And that's exactly what happened. So he felt more shame and more guilt from people who supposedly knew better. So hear me when I say that, okay? Yes, we can be the cause of that. But that's not always the case either. Number two, it can be other people. So again, we know this, right? Other people. You can have a steady diet of people in your life who give you discouraging words, who accuse you, who give you accusations. You may not be good enough, or if you're not performing like you should. It's sometimes built around the behavior part of our lives as well. And a steady diet of that inevitably will always lead to being discouraged. And then the push becomes, the pathway becomes, is that going to lead you to become ultimately depressed? It can happen because of sexual violation. We live in a culture that's highly, as you know this, right? Highly sexualized by what we watch on TV. But you may be a victim of this yourself. Someone have done this to you that causes shame. When you were helpless as a kid and somebody did this to you, if that happened, well, friends, you and I both know that's it heaps on shame and guilt. And that is a path. And it's oftentimes a struggling path that we see a lot of people with as well. Shame and guilt, oftentimes you'll hear these kind of words show up when we talk about these things as well. So it could be other people. So our hearts, other people. Number three, our own bodies can do this. So according to Welsh, that our bodies can lead to discouragement and, yes, eventually depression as well. So our bodies can't create hopelessness, but they can lead us that way. How so? Well, for example, something that you all may be very familiar with as well. If you have a lot of disrupted sleep time, that will affect how you think. We all know that. You struggle with that. You may have struggled with that this morning, right? I had a particularly long day yesterday. I had very little sleep. And if you have enough of that, it's a killer in how you start thinking about things, because everything becomes negative in that way. Our diseases. So some things that we can't control. Maybe you know people in your family who have cancer or ALS or hypothyroidism, or you name the list of things. Things that generally that's just underlying that can cause depression. Medications. Sometimes the treatments of those very diseases can lead to discouragement. I told you my dad self-medicated. So we have prescription drugs. We live in a culture today where opioid addiction is rampant. Right? Because people are trying to self-medicate themselves because of whatever reason. Oftentimes it's related to particular sin that's in their own life. So we have a myriad of ways that we look at. Number four. This was a tough one because perhaps all these things, and Welsh makes the point that all depression is a spiritual issue. And I kind of think he's right on that. Although you have to, I think, be careful how you say that to people as well. But number four is that Satan himself comes and attacks. We've got examples of this in the scriptures, right? He's the father of discouragement, father of lies that we're told in the scriptures as well. And so that can be this underlying issue of discouragement as well. We could keep going, right? But ultimately, yes, I think Welsh is right. All these things are spiritually related. Once again, back to point number one in the warning, though, right? That doesn't mean that you're discouraged, your depression will come because of something that you inherently may have done. But I do think he's right that all these things are spiritually related. They have a spiritual cause to them. Even the fact of cancer and ALS and hypothyroidism, the fact that I have to wear glasses, is the fact because we live under the fall, right? So it's a deeply spiritual thing that we all have to struggle with as well. Okay, so with this in mind, here's all this stuff. How in the world do you take some kind of topic this heavy? And I do think Welsh is right on that handout, that pamphlet Trey gave out. I do think Welsh is absolutely right on this. You can't just tell people to cheer up. That's not going to work. It may work in some moments of discouragement, but friends, that does not work with somebody who's in the deep throes of hopelessness. You want to be encouraging, yes. So there's, I think, this balance that comes as well. Well, as a teacher of teenagers, I see this frequently with students, and I talk frequently with students. Students who are not much older or not much younger than you are right now. Students who have family members, and I teach at a Christian school. That does not mean they're Christian. That does not mean they're immune to discouragement. I have a lot of students whose families are divorced. The student will live with mom one weekend and then the dad the next weekend and literally has to move his or her stuff from one house to the next, every other weekend. And these kids come, and they're distraught. What do we do? And they're discouraged. Well, friends, in times like this, this is where we need the scriptures more than ever. As a matter of fact, we are constantly told that this is one of the compelling things about the New Testament and the Old Testament as well, that we're not given caricatures of people. We're actually given people that are going through these times of discouragement, of hopelessness, warts and all. So I think a good passage, a really good passage to look at this morning, if you have a Bible, if you turn here really quick, is Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 27. Matthew 7, 24 through 27. Now, these are not the two responses I'm going to have you write down, but they're going to lead into those two responses. Matthew 7, 24 through 27. Matthew 7, 24 through 27. Friends, this is a very familiar passage, and sometimes familiar passages are dangerous because they're familiar, right? We take them for granted, and we skip over them. So I'm going to read to you a very familiar passage in the light of what's some ways that we can start moving towards some kind of response, either you personally towards discouragement and depression, or helping other people in this as well. Jesus says this. I'm picking up right in the middle of this chapter, or toward the end. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man. Well, it's like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on the house, but it did not fall. Why? Well, because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who builds his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell. And great was the fall that was in it. Friends, I think what's significant about this passage is that Jesus mentions two houses. Two houses here, and if we carry the metaphor out, two houses that are built on something. And one of the things we know from this passage is that Jesus is saying, well, one house is built on him and on his word, and the other house is built on a shifting sand. This is really familiar because of all the storms that we've been seeing on the news right now, all the flooding, right? And these two houses both get hit, and they get hit hard. I also find it, too, that both of these two houses go through very tough times. In other words, just because you say you profess to believe in Jesus and trust him and read his word, friends, you and I both know that does not make you immune to discouragement or storms. As a matter of fact, this is part of Jesus' point. It's a guarantee that it will happen. It's just the foundation of which those two things are built as well. I also find it significant that Jesus never says that the one who builds his or her house upon him and his word will never feel like the house will collapse. Jesus never says that. You may very well feel like your house will collapse. As a matter of fact, Jesus points to, he uses a really quite graphic language here when he says, and he talks about both of these houses, that the winds both blew and they beat on the house. It creaked, it moaned. So sometimes in a faulty theology, people will tell you, if you just have enough faith, then you're going to be okay. Well, that's true. But friends, even in that, we know that it may not feel always that way. That it's going to shake your house sometimes. And the tricky part here is not to trust always your feelings in that, because it's going to feel like the house is going to collapse. And Jesus says, this abiding rock of who he is, this is what you hang on to in that way. So there are moments when discouragement comes. There are moments when depression will come. And we'll feel like that the worries and cares of this world will collapse our house. And that Jesus, we know that this promise from Jesus is very clear on that, that if we hang to him, we hold to him. And in turn, we know that actually he holds on to us, that we can work through this. So the scriptures talk about and tell us this idea of depression will come. So now your part. I'll let you put this in your notes. How does it come? And what are our two responses to this, really quick? So one of these responses is what Jesus is saying, this response of faith. So what do I mean by faith? Faith in the sense of trusting and relying upon who Jesus is. So another quick passage, I'll let you write this down if you want to look this up, that would be great too. But of all the people in the New Testament, perhaps Paul is the one who is kind of the embodiment of this. So of trusting in Christ, holding on, having faith in times of really, really deep struggles, right? So listen to what Paul says. This is 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. So this is a really interesting passage, 10, 11, and 12 in 2 Corinthians, where Paul's having to address a church that's in pretty bad order. And he's actually written two or three letters to them already. This is one of them. Paul says this in verse 3. He says, "For though we walk in the flesh, that we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. That we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God." And then this verse. So you can even write this one down. Paul says this command, to take every thought captive. And then he tells us why. To obey Christ. To take every thought captive in order to obey Christ. This is the warfare that we go through, all these pathways that come in. And eventually what we see is that our thoughts give rise to our feelings, and our feelings give rise to our thoughts. And there becomes this cycle in this as well. Friends, this is according to what Paul's telling us, this is the warfare that we have. I played that trick on you earlier with your embodied people. This is the warfare that goes on in all of our heads, right? What are we going to follow? What are we going to trust? Even when we feel as though that the world gets pulled out from underneath us. Listen to what Paul says earlier in 2 Corinthians, where he responds to these thoughts, right? And Paul says, "We're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. We're perplexed, but not driven to despair. We're persecuted, but not forsaken. We're struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body of death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifest in our bodies." Paul was both literally and figuratively very much aware of what it meant to be in a storm. And he's very much aware of the entanglement of our own thoughts as well. And Paul says to take them captive, and then to do that is to obey Christ. You either start obeying your feelings or you obey Christ. The house will shake and it'll feel like it'll collapse. You obey Christ. You hang on to him. You trust him. Number two, the other response is isolation. That you will become, if you listen to these thoughts, which will give rise to your feelings, you will become further isolated. I know this because I've seen this. So let me flip that around in 2 Corinthians. This is what happens if you reverse it. That passage I just read to you in chapter 4. If you give in to these things, I'm going to flip things around what Paul would say. Because the reverse of it would be this. We are afflicted in every way, therefore we're crushed. We're perplexed, and therefore we're driven to despair. We're persecuted, and therefore we're forsaken. We're struck down, and therefore you're destroyed. Friends, this is the work of Satan in our lives, to destroy our families, destroy you as well. And these thoughts, these feelings, the entanglement of that. So here's the warning once again. That are you saying to me, if I have enough faith, I can overcome? That's not ultimately what I'm saying. You can have enough faith. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is this, that the scriptures are telling us that to trust and obey the person in whom you say you do have faith in. Will it feel like the house will collapse? Yes. Can you trust the Lord? Yes. I know that sounds like a Sunday school answer, but friends, this is the answer that we're given in the scriptures as well. By the way, before I close, I'll give you guys some questions in your group for just a second. Thank you for listening, by the way. Just a last little parting thought here on this thing. Years later, toward the end of my dad's life, my dad did ultimately die of cancer. And I got to be with him his last moment. I held his hand while he died. Up to that point, all the things that he'd gone through, treatments, all this stuff, all these immensely discouraging things and depressing things in his life, I'd get a phone call from my dad. Inevitably, it would be a bad report about a treatment that was happening or whatever it was. And every time, every conversation of this man who I watched and heard yell at night, self-medicate, do all these things, at the end of our conversations, he would always say this. He would say, "Chris, the Lord is good." And I would say, Dad, yes, he is. Friends, you may be extremely discouraged. You may be on the pathway to depression. Trust in the Lord. Hang on to him. Because what you'll find out is he's actually hanging on to you. Okay?